I would just look online and look at something that I like, and I try to bring it to life because I love clothes, I love fashion, I love shoes. So instead of like wasting money on that, I would try to create it and then bring that beautiful piece to life.
This is Yukon North of Ordinary, the podcast. We share a more in-depth take on the most popular stories from our print magazine, showcasing the territory's extraordinary people, culture, and outdoors. I'm your host, Karen McCall. When Natasha Peter dreamed about a career in fashion, she imagined her pieces on runways in New York and Paris. That's a long way from Ross River, Yukon, the small Kaska First Nations community where she grew up. But Natasha didn't let distance get in her way when she started making handcrafted fashion and jewelry. The creator behind Kaska Dena Design says her culture is a key element in her inspiration and success. Today, Natasha's story of how she got her red carpet debut. To read about this story, you can pick up the summer issue of Yukon North of Ordinary magazine. Inside, you'll find Amy Kenny's story about Natasha, as well as another artist from Ross River, Vashti Etzel, founder of Goldeneye Designs, and of course, photos of both of their work. We enter today's conversation with Natasha describing an art piece she made that has a story behind it.
Recently, I just made a neck piece. It was a piece that reminded me of my grandma that had passed away 4 years ago. And I have a lot of memories with her growing up and her taking me out hunting and harvesting and stuff. And there was this one time where we were out on the mountains and she showed me the mountain bluebells, the flower, and she would tell me that they were edible and taste like honey. So that memory kind of brought me back, and then just making the statement piece reminded me of her.
Can you describe what it looks like and how you made it?
It has a bunch of bluebells, flower petals on it with leaves, and it has fur at the bottom of it to make it more like textile look to it.
Are the flowers beaded?
Yes, beaded, tufted, and it has like a wire neck chain.
Let's go back in time. You mentioned your grandmother. Can you tell us, you grew up in Ross River, right?
Yes.
When did you learn how to sew?
Since grade school, like elementary. They still do, but the Kaska language class, my elders then taught a bunch of us students how to like do the basics of sewing and beading and stuff like that. And I learned from them, and then there was my grandparents on the side and aunties that had taught me, and I never really liked it when I was growing up, but later on down the road, like when I first started 7-8 years ago, it was really therapeutic for me.
For folks who aren't familiar with Ross River, can you kind of just tell people a little bit about it? Like, it's quite a small, remote community.
Yeah. Ross River is just north from Whitehorse, northeast, and it's about 500 kilometers away. But when I was growing up, there was 500 people that lived there, the population size. And when I, like, today, now, there's about 300 people, so it has changed a lot.
And are you related to a lot of people in town?
In Ross River?
Yeah.
Yes, I have a huge family. Basically, the whole town is relatives.
You mentioned your grandma. What role did she play for you growing up?
My grandma, Tootsie Charlie, played a big role in my life because my mom, she was a single mother and she worked a lot. So when she worked, she would bring me over to my grandma's, and yeah, and then she was the one that had taught me a lot of the traditional stuff. And then my mom would also take her out hunting and she would take me out trapping. So she played a really big role in my life.
So you got the you got a pretty full cultural experience growing up, like the on the land stuff and the art side as well.
Yes, very blessed in that way. My stepdad, Gordon Peter, he was very artistic, or still is, and he does carvings. And my mom and both of them kind of, they used to do a lot of workshops when I was growing up. So I guess there was a lot of artistic environment around me while growing up. And then on the traditional side, my grandma and put them together kind of thing.
That's something that a lot of even Yukoners might not really know about Ross River. It is quite an artistic community.
It is. There's a lot of very amazing artists over there. A lot that people don't know of, and I really want to help to bring that more in to show people.
Let's talk about your journey. How did you come back to sewing as an adult?
Let me see, where should I begin? I believe it was 7 years ago when I first started. And at that time, I had quit working for a mine, the mining companies. I did that for about 8 years, 10 years of my life. And then I just all of a sudden quit and decided to go back to college to do upgrading to become a nurse. And I was trying to figure out how to make money on the side to for expenses and stuff and food. Anyways, when I first started thinking of doing it, I remembered what my grandma Alice John had told me. She said that when grandpa was out trapping, she would sew, and that was an easy way for her to bring in money because she had 12 kids and there was a bunch of other kids that would come and stay with her, so she would make extra money from sewing. So I remembered that, and I started doing that when I went back to school, and it did help. I bought my first set of winter tires, and I was able to buy food. And at that time, too, I was in a dark spot in my life, badly into addictions and stuff. And anyways, within a year, 2 years into sewing, it was healing me, I found. And I didn't realize it until when I was right into it and I looked back and I'm like, wow, I'm not doing what I was doing before. And I was being more involved in my sewing traditional skills and then hunting and trapping and all of that with my parents. So it had helped a lot. And at that time too, I posted a lot of stuff on social media. And it just became like a chain, and it was going around Canada, and people were coming, messaging me for custom orders, and it just kept going and going and going from there.
Why do you think sewing and starting to, tap into this artistic side of yourself, why do you think that helped you overcome addiction?
I believe it doesn't matter what race we are, your culture heals you. I truly believe that. It doesn't matter if you're First Nations or not. If you go back to your roots, I believe that really heals a person.
You said you had some pieces that you posted on social media that started circulating. What were those early items that you were creating?
Slippers. I started off with slippers, and the vamp part was my beadwork. And usually it would be just random pieces that I just picture in my head and I put it on a piece of paper, and just the way how I beaded it, and it just became a thing for me.
we say slippers up here, but I guess people sometimes think of them as moccasins, and the vamp is, that's the beaded part that's on the top, right?
Yes.
What kind of patterns do you like to bead?
Flowers. I love beading flowers because they're very colorful and they come in different shapes, different sizes, and I love doing them.
Was there a turning point when you were making some money on the side from your sewing and you started to think, oh, maybe I could actually do this full time?
Well, when I first started 7 years ago, I've made like this huge goal that I just set out loudly. I remember my grandpa, Art John, he was known really well for his traditional skills as well. And he had led the army through the South Canal here, like broke the trail for them.
When they were building the road?
Yeah. And he was really well known for that and respectfully all over the Yukon. And I guess he was my role model and I wanted to do something like that. I wanted to become known just to have it like a family thing. Anyways, when I first started 7 years ago, I said one of these days my things are going to be in a gallery, fashion shows, and possibly around the world, like Paris and New York. And I don't know, for some reason, that just stuck with me for a long time. I guess as the years went by, my skills have improved a lot. And there's a time where I'm like, I gotta try to make this legit and show people that it's possible to turn what you love into a business. So I ended up doing it, and I met into some amazing people that believed in me and that helped me to get to where I am now.
How did you choose the name for your company?
Well, I started off as Creative Denna Designs because I was doing a little bit of everything from like jewelry to dream catchers to moccasins. And then I just came up with the name Creative Denna Designs. My dad actually had helped me, my dad Gordon. But then later on, I kind of thought, like, you know, I grew up with a lot of my elders and my aunties that had helped me learn my skills, and my mom too. So I kind of thought about it and I'm like, yeah, I think I need to change my name to kind of like connect the others with my business, because most of them aren't alive anymore to this day. Like a lot of my grandparents. But anyways, Kaska came from my nation, like my aunties, my grandmas and all of that. And then Denna is people. So Kaska Denna Designs.
Like the designs of the Kaska or the Kaska people designs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Paying homage to your family and your culture.
Yeah. And it's kind of like just carrying my grandparents' legacy and then passing it on to my daughter and whoever like down the road for the next generations to come.
I want to talk about where your business has gotten to, but first I want to jump back to something that I read maybe through one of your social media accounts or a video is about your traditional name.
Denisqualia.
Yeah, can you explain that a little bit?
Where do I begin? Denisqualia means moose-skin scraper, and it also refers to hard worker. When I was growing up, and there was this time where I was sitting with my Grandma Tootsie and Grandma Mary Charlie, and I remember prior to that, all of my cousins, relatives, they all were all proud about their Denna names, and they were all named after animals, and they were just proud of it. And I thought to myself, I'm like, why don't I have a Denna name? So back to my grandma's, I was sitting down with them and I asked my grandma Tootsie, I'm like, why don't I have a Denna name? Indian name, I told her. And they didn't say anything to me and they couldn't figure out why I didn't have any at that time. But then the next day, my Grandma Mary came up to me. She's like, I know a name for you, a perfect name. And I had to have been like 10 years old or something like that, maybe younger. but she called me Dennis Coelho. And I looked at her and I'm like, what does that mean? She said, Moosekin Scraper. And she said, that was my dad's grandma's grandma's name. And I didn't like that name because I was expecting to be some animal name. And yeah, I didn't really like it or accept it until I created my business. And I saw from where I was at from previous times to now, I really look up to my Dena name for sure.
A Moosekin Scraper, and that means hard worker. I mean, I can picture that, like how hard the person, but also the scraper is working to, is it to remove the fur from the moose?
Yeah, the fur, the flesh, and like just scraping it to make it soft.
Do you think of that when you're working, like how hard you're working and see that connection?
Yes. Yes. There was a lot of times where I thought of that.
You talk a lot about your grandmas. You had very strong women in your life growing up.
Yeah, I did. A lot of the women in my family are very strong and very independent.
So let's fast forward. I know you went back in at UConstruct. You did some business boot camp and development programs. How did you get into your first fashion show? That was in Edmonton, right?
Yes. I can't remember. I think I applied for this fashion show in Edmonton before the second wave of COVID had happened, because things were like settling down for a bit and people thought that things were coming back. And then the day or the month of the fashion show, I was prepared to send off my collection. I couldn't go down. I was planning to like mail it out to the lady that I was talking to. And by time my package had hit Edmonton to the lady, she messaged me back and she said there was a second wave of the COVID had happened and everything had canceled. I'm like, oh, shoot. And then when things started to settle down more, there was another fashion show and she reached out to me, and then that's how it had happened.
Were you able to go down to the first fashion show in Edmonton where your art was showing?
Yes, I was able to do that. And shortly after my fashion show, my collection had gone into the Arts Underground Gallery here in Whitehorse. And then, yeah, not too long after that, I was talking to a lady that was part of the fashion show in Edmonton. She knew a connection to a fashion show in New York where I've applied and was able to go to that too.
Wow, New York.
Yeah, that was something else, I tell you.
What was that like finding out that you'd get to travel there and show your work there?
It was amazing to be able to show my collections on the runway as a First Nations. It was something different compared to all of the other designers, because theirs were all like high fashion compared to mine was like slow fashion and stuff. So it was a different, it was amazing to see that.
How many pieces were shown?
In New York, holy, there was 21 pieces.
Wow. Okay, like what kinds of things are we talking about?
From dress sets to one piece to two pieces to a shirt to jackets, a little of everything, and like shoes and jewelry.
You made 21 items for that. How long did that take?
2 months. I was super excited. So I had all that adrenaline and I'm like, I gotta get this done. I don't know, I'd wake up at 7 a.m, go to bed at 3.
Wow.
Yeah, and at that time too, I was working a second job. I was really determined.
How do you get the ideas for your designs? You talked about your statement piece, but like the more like the clothing, like some of the fabrics are reminiscent of sort of what one would call like granny hankies. Is that what they're called? Sort of like colorful floral designs.
Yes. I incorporated that with my clothing shortly after my grandma had passed away 4 years ago. And I guess I started doing it just a way of feeling a bit closer to her in a way. Because, you know, I miss my grandma a lot. To this day, I still cry for her and still, I guess the grieving will never stop. It doesn't ever stop. And where I am now from where I was before she had passed away, I've changed a lot, and especially becoming a mother too. And yeah, I really wish she was here to see all of it. So just having a little piece of that and statement pieces and stories and stuff, it's just a way for me to stay close to her.
Did your grandma wear, like, so what I referred to earlier as these, like, sort of granny hankies, that's sort of a reference to elders, First Nation elders wearing these beautiful, colorful sort of handkerchiefs over their head? Or is that something that your grandma would wear?
Well, my Grandma Tootsie's mom would wear it. I remember when I was growing up, she had like a huge collections of colorful hankies all over in her house. And I remember there's times where she would like go through four different color hankies before she'd leave. She'd like try it on. She'd be like, no, not this one. I'll try on this one. It was kind of cute to see that. And I guess when my great grandma had passed away, my Grandma Tootsie had kept some of her hankies, and she'd always carry around her mom's hanky, and just as a reminder, as for her mom too. And that's what I'm kind of doing right now too.
Yeah, it goes back to what you said earlier about kind of continuing on this legacy.
Yeah.
And your sewing pieces, are you all self-taught? I mean, with the help of your family members, but otherwise...
Yes, self-taught. I just used whatever basic skills that I was taught growing up from my elders and my mom. I remember my mom used to sit up late at night sewing hats and stuff for my brothers or my dad and stuff, like small little things here and there, but she would stay up late. Yeah, and I just remembered those basic skills. And the clothing part, I would just look online and look at something that I like, and I try to bring it to life because I love clothes, I love fashion, I love shoes. So instead of like wasting money on that, I would try to create it and then bring that beautiful piece to life.
What kind of reaction did you get after the New York Fashion Show or at the New York Fashion Show?
I got invited to like several different fashion shows. A lot of people liked my collection when I was like, I felt kind of out of place in a way, because me being a First Nations and everyone else had the high fashion, like really fancy, beautiful clothing versus mine is, I have hide and beadwork and fur and everything.
And by high fashion, you mean sort of like all like the sort of well-known high-end labels?
Yeah.
Like established.
Yes, that like factory-made clothing and stuff.
So what an impact for you with your, you called it slow fashion, like all the things you've handmade and like the fur and like the natural items. Way to shake up a runway.
Yeah, I had some designers or agencies or whatever running after me, but I was so busy trying to deal with my models because I brought 15 models and there was 5 models that were already there. Over to New York from Canada.
Okay. Oh, great. Okay.
Yeah, so I was like...
Were they all First Nations women?
Yes, they were. All Canada-wide ladies that I brought over with me. But at the fashion show, there was this agency that was kind of like trying to get my attention, but I was like so busy because everything's like super fast. They're like nonstop and
like you're helping dress the models.
Yeah, dress the models and undress them and trying to like get out of there because there's these other designers that are coming with their models. So it was just all over the place. But I had one lady that was there that was kind of helping me, and she spoke to the agency there. And she was trying to get me to go to San Jose, I think it was, to one of her fashion shows. But what she said that she liked about my stuff was the artwork, the beading and everything, and the different textiles and like the hide. So I was like, wow, she really loved it.
Not surprising. It's so beautiful.
Thank you.
And then similarly, you got an invitation to a Paris fashion show shortly after, right?
Yes. It's kind of crazy how that had happened. Like the fashion show that I went to in Edmonton, there was a lady there that had put the fashion show up in New York and Paris. So I was able to do both of them. Like I went to two different fashion shows in New York, and then the one fashion show in Paris.
You said you felt a bit out of place there. Was the vibe welcoming or is it pretty like competitive?
Just everyone's doing their own thing and getting sorting out their own stuff. It's just me coming from a small city, town, Whitehorse, Ross River, going into like New York and me being the only First Nations there with the First Nations art, with like slippers, muckluks, hides and fur and beadwork, kind of just felt different compared to what they have there.
Yeah, it must have been a bit stressful, right? Like you don't know how people are going to react.
Yeah, I was kind of like stressed out about that because I think it was a few years ago, there was this celebrity that went on stage with muckluks and he got kicked off. I can't remember who... what celebrity that was, but that became
a black tie event where you're supposed to be wearing black shoes or something, right? And he showed up with mukluks or slippers or something. I remember that.
And that became like a huge thing, but that got figured out and everything. But, you know, just having that feeling and not knowing what to expect going into a huge city like that.
You talked about earlier, mentioned something, being a role model for your daughter and just thinking of like, you know, having the next generation, having it more normalized to see First Nation fashion designers and models. And so that, you know, you're kind of like a trailbreaker, but hopefully you'll make it easier for the people who come after you.
Yeah. The way I look at it is that being a First Nations person, it's important to keep your traditional skills alive, especially for the next generations to come, because I remember my grandparents always talking about that. And, you know, I don't have any grandparents now, and I feel like it's my responsibility to teach what I know to my daughter so she can keep it alive and we don't lose that traditional skills. And if she sees it becoming a big thing around Canada, seeing that I could do it would show her that it's important and she can do it too.
Let's talk about where you're at now. It's May and you just launched an online store, right?
Yes, launched it on May 8th.
What can people see on there?
A variety of jewelry, footwear, clothing, and couple of rifle cases.
Okay. like leather beaded rifle cases?
Canvas rifle cases. When I was growing up, my grandma would always make like rifle cases to protect her guns. So I was just cleaning up my place and I randomly forgot about these rifle cases that I had made that I wanted to sell a while ago. I'm like, oh, these could just go on my website.
So how many items are you starting off with on there?
53 pieces.
Wow.
Wow. Okay. And you're like, are you just a one person operation? You're doing all of this on your own?
Yes.
Wow.
That's so impressive.
I'm doing everything by myself.
And you're working, you just mentioned like you mentioned before our conversation, you're working in your kitchen. Like, that's your workshop right now.
Yeah, my studio is my kitchen table in my place. Yeah, I've taken over the kitchen table.
Maybe, well, it seems like things are going well, so maybe you'll have a dedicated workshop space at some point.
I am hoping that I do, to just have my my home as home and not a workplace, because if I see a piece of work on the table, I'm like, I gotta go do it.
Yeah, it's hard to keep that separation.
Yes, so it'd be nice to have like my work and my personal life separated, but it will come, I know.
Where are your customers? Where are people buying your items from?
Canada-wide and parts of the States.
I heard that a celebrity has been sporting some of your work. How did that come about?
Yeah, I guess I'm really well known as the shoe lady. Like I said before, I incorporate granny hankies in a lot of my fashion stuff, clothing. So I did that with heels. And after my fashion show in New York, I guess they had promoted me like all over in the States kind of thing. And I came across a celebrity, a First Nations celebrity. Her name is Kara Jade Myers, and she's from San Francisco. And she found me on Instagram. So she had reached out to me because I had posted a few heel projects that I was working on just before Christmas. And yeah, she's like, I want a pair of your heels. And she's like, they're so beautiful, I really want it. At first, I didn't even know who she was. I'm like, who is this? So I kind of like clicked on her profile and I saw that she was a celebrity. And I'm like, wow. And I'm like, I messaged her and I'm like, are you an actual celebrity? Are you an actual person? And she's like, yeah, I just finished shooting a movie. So I was like super excited about it, and I did her heels and I sent it off to her, and I sent like a couple of earrings just as like a gift, because you know, it's first celebrity. And I'm like, I've always wanted a celebrity to buy or to order something from me, and sure enough, something like that had happened. So I'm like, you're the first one. You could have a couple of my earrings for free. She was pretty happy about it, but she's been like super busy because she's a producer too. She produces movies and she's an actor. She's a model. She's just nonstop on the go. I follow her on Instagram and she's just like posts after post after post.
Have you seen any posts of her wearing the shoes yet?
Not yet, but she said she's getting to it.
She probably has to wear practical shoes for a lot of her jobs.
Yeah.
The heels come out for special occasion.
Yeah.
Where can people find your work online?
On my website, caskadenadesigns.com.
Well, I'm so excited to see where you and your business get to in the coming years. And thank you so much for taking the time to come in and tell me about it.
Thank you for having me.
That's it for this episode of Yukon North of Ordinary, the podcast. Please share this episode and leave us a review. It really helps. Subscribe anywhere you get your podcasts. You can also subscribe to our print magazine by going to northofordinary.com. While you're there, check out Yukon North of Ordinary merchandise. And for a full product line, visit the Bricks and Mortar Store in Whitehorse, located on the corner of 2nd Avenue and Steel Street, across from City Hall. There's a great selection of clothing, hats, stickers, glassware, and more. Do you have something to say about this episode? We'd love to hear from you. Find us on social media at North of Ordinary. You can also contact me, Karen McCall, with feedback or story ideas. Editor at northofordinary.com is my email. Thanks to the whole team at North of Ordinary Media. Our podcast artwork is by art director Manu Kegenhoff. Our music is by Headcandy and tribeofnoise.com. Thanks for listening. We have another episode coming out soon. I hope you listen in.